Thank you. It's always a delight to follow Dr. Foster, because even though we share an office right next to each other, I realize how little I know about the full range of work that she's doing. So that was fabulous. If you've got a pen and a paper, just take out and think for a minute. I want to ask you a question. So women who view their ultrasounds, who do you think, in the context of having an abortion, wants to see their ultrasound image? And what do you think would make someone not want to see their ultrasound image? I think we have very deep assumptions and hypotheses that we hold. There are certainly, in the other work that I'm doing around content analysis regarding ultrasound viewing in the legal and the advocacy world, very strongly held rhetorical positions on this issue. And I hope what I'll give you today is a little bit of information that might make our rhetoric match women's individual experiences. So hold on to your answers. I won't ask you for them, but then at the end you can see where you were, because I know I started out in a significantly different place than I ended up after this body of work. So I want to acknowledge my co-authors, Diana Green Foster and Undina Darney. Dr. Foster is the principal investigator on the Turnaway study from which this data comes, but it's part of a larger body of work we have regarding ultrasound viewing in the abortion context. So this particular image of an ultrasound has permeated the airways. I took this image from a newspaper article talking about the newest regulations in Texas. Now, what you'll notice, of course, about this image is it's highly familiar, as well as it's significantly later in gestation. I mean, 90% of abortions happen in the first trimester, but our ultrasound image of abortion is much later in pregnancy. And much of it comes from the fact that abortion images are almost ubiquitous. We know that 60% of women who've had abortions have already had one child. Many of you in this room have probably had a child or been with someone who has had a child and seen an ultrasound image. So we're not in a time and space in American culture where the sort of ultrasound image as it existed in the early 1970s or late 1970s, where it was sort of a new concept. Most of us are highly familiar with this image, and we have very important relationships to that image. So some focus group work that was done by the Reproductive Health Technologies Project, looking at how ultrasound has changed the way we feel as a culture about the fetus. Now, it has not changed the way people feel about their positions on abortion. Most people hold positions on abortion that have very little to do with the status of the fetus, that have a lot to do with the status of women, their concepts about legal rights, their concepts about civil rights. But it does change the way we feel about the fetus, even though it hasn't necessarily changed our positions on abortion. So recognizing this sort of universal sort of queasiness that many of us have about the fetus, now that we can see and understand its fetal development sort of over time and in real time and space, abortion rights opponents have sought to regulate abortion in the direct name of limiting access to abortion care. So there are 9 states that require either verbal counseling or written materials to include information how women can access abortion services, and 19 states that regulate the provision of abortion at ultrasound. So if you do an ultrasound, you must show that to a woman, you must offer her the opportunity, you must refer her. And so a variety of state laws, but all of which sort of are surrounding this sort of optional idea that women who want can either seek out or see those ultrasound images in the course of getting abortions. Well, that's the old world. In the new world, there's now an effort to try to mandate ultrasound viewing, the belief that somehow women aren't being told the truth and they need to actually know what they are doing. So both Texas and Oklahoma have passed laws that mandate that women view their ultrasound image and hear the fetal heartbeat and a description of what the physical picture is. Now, both of these laws have to date been enjoined by the courts within either the state or the appellate court level. How these will be determined by the Supreme Court or by those state Supreme Courts, we don't know at this moment in time. But at this moment, there is no active law requiring women, but there are those that are being debated in the court system. But not to be outdone at the individual state level, of course, the House of Representatives in this country state that we're in right now are looking to efforts to regulate this at the federal level. So Michelle Bachmann has introduced at the House something called the Heartbeat Informed Consent Act. This, of course, will probably pass the House, unlikely to pass the Senate, and President Obama has said he would veto it. But it does give you a sense of where people are going and what the rhetorical angle here is. So this law would require, like those state laws, that women be forced to view their ultrasound be forced to listen to the fetal heart tones, and then the physician needs to describe the physical structures that are seen on the ultrasound. And the justification she uses, as is the justification that we see in both the Texas and the Oklahoma statutes, are that a small study, or it could have been a large study, it hasn't been published in the peer-reviewed literature, by Focus on the Family, found that when women were undecided about their abortions, 78 chose life. So there's this belief that the ultrasound image is strong enough to make women decide against abortion. So what we wanted to know was, you know, what do women say and how do they experience ultrasound viewing in the context of their abortion? And what might that information give us in terms of discussing and thinking about these kinds of laws? So the methods for this study, this data is taken from the National Abortion Turnaway Study, and if you have questions about methods, Dr. Foster can answer those in the question and answer period. But women were recruited actually at 30 abortion providers across the country. There's almost 1,000 women in the study. They're in three groups. Those women who showed up just beyond the gestational limit of the clinic, and they were unable to, there's no other facility that's close by. Those women are at a one ratio. Then there are the controls, women who are seen just under the gestational limits. There's two controls in the sample for every turnaway. And then there is a one ratio first trimester sample, in other words, to try to get a sense of are there differences between women who present in later pregnancy and those who present in earlier pregnancy. Now, women who participate in the study are interviewed 1 week after their enrollment, and I see Danielle in the back, who I believe has done over 700 of these interviews. So 1 week after they've either obtained the abortion or been turned away, and these are the points at which we ask them about ultrasound viewing. So this sample, I should note, 90% of abortions occur in the first trimester, but only a quarter of the abortions in this study are in the first trimester. So it's very skewed towards abortions in the second trimester, which I assume if I had asked you about your hypotheses out loud, that you would assume that gestational age plays some role in this story. So I think this is a good sample to answer that because we have a much larger representation of people who are later in pregnancy. So women are asked three questions about their viewing. Were you given the opportunity to have an ultrasound appointment? Were you offered to view it? If you were offered, did you decide? And did you ask to view it if you weren't offered? And then how did you feel afterwards? And this is an open-ended question. And I'm going to give you a little bit of the analysis we're working on currently with that data. So obviously we wanted to calculate viewing rates by different kinds of legal environments. Now remember, I'm only talking about legal environments that have an optional viewing because there are no in-place current mandated ones right now. We did a multivariate logistic regression to predict who would view their ultrasound. In other words, if they were offered or if they asked, what actually predicts people viewing. We did some quantitative coding of the open-ended questions to create some categories of emotional experiences, and then conducted chi-squared tests to assess whether there are differences in who experiences which kind of emotions. So what can I tell you about viewing by the legal environment? So overall, the viewing rates in this study are about 34%. About one-third of women, when either given a chance or asked, viewed their ultrasound image voluntarily. 25% of the women in this study exist in one of those regulatory environments that I mentioned earlier, where there is some state law regarding ultrasound viewing. 80% of the women in this study who live in these states were offered an opportunity. Now remember, not all laws say every woman. So some laws say if you do an ultrasound, you must offer her. So we don't want to leave thinking that 20% of clinics aren't complying with the law. These are probably complying with the law, as well as some women who probably just don't recall whether or not. But of the 80% of women who recall that they were offered the opportunity to view, 47% of the women agreed to view. So almost half of those, which gives us an overall viewing rate of women in these states of 41%. By comparison, if you think about the 75% or the remaining portion of the women who live in a state without an ultrasound law regulatory environment, a third of those women were still offered the opportunity to view. So even though it's not mandated by the state, many clinics themselves have decided to offer women the opportunity to view. 2/3 of those women. So a higher percentage here of women who opt to view when given the opportunity. And this may have to do with selective viewing, who gets offered. But we don't know that from this data. Approximately 1 in 8 of the women, or 12% of the women, were not offered the opportunity to view, but actually asked proactively to view their ultrasound. So I think the idea that women are being coerced gets a little bit of challenge here by the number of women who are voluntarily requesting an opportunity to view the ultrasound in the course of the abortion. And the total viewing rates at this site is about 31%. So thinking about our multivariate logistic regression model to try to decide what predicts viewing their ultrasound. And for here we have, was a question that changed a little, so the sample is a little smaller in this, but certainly large enough to build a model. And ironically, we find no effect of viewing by either race, ethnicity, or by whether or not women are having an earlier or a later procedure. Now, I know my own assumption was that women who are earlier would be more likely to view than women who are later, that those women would be more averse to viewing, but we don't find that in this model. The gestational age of the pregnancy does not predict whether or not someone is likely to accept viewing. We did, however, find an effective age, that the younger women were more likely to view, and the youngest women had the highest rates of viewing, and the next were the women who were 20 to 25, as opposed to women who are over the age of 30. And this may have to do with an age factor about just the value of technology, the role of images, that there may just be more general comfort with these kinds of experiences. And receiving an abortion in a state with an ultrasound viewing law does increase the risk of and odds of ultrasound viewing by 70%. So women who live in those states are more likely to view. Now, we didn't ask specifically whether or not the ultrasound image had any effect on the decision, because one limitation I will say of this study, of course, is we're only looking at women who present for an abortion. So the women who leave voluntarily, we don't have. But it does suggest that some women do view this image as, or this information as, a part of their decision. And what you see here in a 2-to-1 ratio is that more women are affirmed in their decision than are actually sort of led to reconsider their decision. And of the 15 women who said that they would reconsider or were reconsidering their decision, they all went through with wanting the abortion. So while it did create a moment of reconsideration, it didn't preclude them from having the abortion. So, okay, that's the first, is thinking about who views and who and what we know about the people who view. So let's talk about women's emotional experiences after viewing. So these are from the open-ended questions. And I have to say, it's always a delight to work across mixed methods. So I am a deeply qualitative sociologist. Diana is a quantitative demographer. And having the ability to do small open-ended questions gave us space that I don't think we would have started with had we started with the survey. So 13% of the women use words like happy and excited at the visual images. And so while we would have expected that not everyone had negative experiences, I'm not sure that we would have put happy and excited as places on a survey. In addition, another 10 or 11% of women said that they were fine or okay. Almost 20% said that they had no effect. And then we have some women who have mixed and confused, and about 30% of women for whom they articulated this made them sad or upset. And I'll just give you a little bit of insight into the coding, just to give a sense of the kinds of open-ended things that women said. So when women use the terms happy and excited, they said things like, I was kind of happy, but I knew the decision I would have to make. Glad to see it. Wanted to. Glad to have the choice. I was happy that I got to see it, but then again, I don't know. I would say I was happy. Kind of happy. I can't explain it. I just was. And one that I think gives us pause as advocates, but I think is really important to think about how women experience this. It made me happy because it was nice to see it alive and see it moving. So women can have a direct recognition of this as a living being and not be precluded from doing what they need to do. Because the reason that they're there to have the abortion often has nothing to do with how they view the value or status of the fetus. In contrast, if you think about how women articulated sad and upset, I think these are good emotions for us to realize, especially for a provider community, about the kinds of things people say. So it upset me at first, but I knew I couldn't afford another child. I knew the decision I had already made, that I still wanted to see it. So there again, she knows what she needs to do, the image is upsetting to her, and yet she still wants the opportunity to see it. It broke my heart. It was very upsetting. I was pretty upset seeing it, and I was kind of indifferent during, and then I saw it, and I was unhappy and sad. So women have this, you know, some very powerful emotions, and yet they still continue to have their abortions. So what predicts, or, you know, how do we explain who experiences which emotions? In other words, can we determine which kinds of patient populations are more likely to experience what kinds of emotions? And ironically, in our chi-squared tests, we didn't find any statistical difference by age. So younger women, as compared to older women, were not more likely to experience either positive emotions, negative emotions, or any particular kind of emotion. The same is true with no statistical significance in race ethnicity. So again, between white, African American, and Hispanic women, no difference in who experienced specific emotions and no difference in who experienced either positive or negative emotions. And then I think the one that is the most sort of shocking for me in thinking about my own work is that there was no statistical significance in the emotions people experienced by gestational age. And what is great about this sample is we actually have a large number of women who are over 21 weeks of pregnancy. So these are at a time when you would expect that initial fetal image ultrasound picture to have some kind of effect. And it had no effect on who experienced positive emotions, who experienced negative emotions, and who experienced any specific emotions. So our conclusions from this study are that when women have an opportunity to view their ultrasound, some women opt to view and others do not opt to view, and that younger women are more likely to view, and that ultrasound laws do appear to have an effect on increasing the rates of viewing. Now, women who view their ultrasound images report a range of experience, both positive and negative, and that gestational age of pregnancy does not seem to predict who views or how people respond to viewing. And I think that leads to a series of policy and advocacy conclusions. The first is, I think advocates need to be very clear to avoid making universalizing claims about how women will experience their ultrasound viewing, and that ultrasound viewing can actually have a positive as well as a negative experience on women in the abortion context. Now, women who view their images also obtain abortions. I don't think that we need to be scared of the idea that somehow women will be turned away from what they need to do simply because they viewed an ultrasound image. I think that gives providers comfort that offering women the opportunity to view their ultrasound may be a good thing in the clinical context. Women appear to be able to say yes, and women appear to be able to say no, which suggests that there's not coercion, at least at the provider level, when women are offered the opportunity to view. And while many women view, many women opt out of viewing. And I truly believe from this data, it suggests that laws should always be there to give women the option, and that the coercive laws actually are not in conversation with the way women would like to experience ultrasound viewing in the abortion context. And thank you so much.
Thank you, Tracy.